Hi, and welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com and the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. Today we have with us on the phone a good friend of mine. He's an outfitter, pretty much guides all over the damn world, actually. You kind of go everywhere. And that's Zach Knowles of Extreme Outfitters. How are you, man?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good, man. Just getting ready for seasons coming up hot here. I got 10 days, I think. Yeah, 10 days before I leave for my elk hunt in Utah. And then, then it's just kind of go from there on out.
Yeah, it'll be here before we know it. I can't believe it's already time to start again. It seems like we just got done.
Yeah. You know, more and more, and I stopped hunting in the spring a while ago, several years ago since I had kids. Actually, I don't really do the spring hunts anymore, but still. I mean, my big game season's been going to February, and then I do some coyote calling and stuff like that here around the house and, little stuff here and there, but not, I don't go on any destination hunts. And I don't know, it just seems like, I start in July because I've been going to California the last few years. So it's nice, though. I don't like having that big of a break in between.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot of people think when they hear about a hunting season or like being an outfitter, being a guy, they're like, oh, you only work a couple months out of the year. It must be nice to have the other 6 or 8 months off. And it's not like that. By the time if you do any kind of scouting or anything through the summer,
yeah,
it's more likely almost year round. But even if you're just talking about the hunting, you get started in August, early September. And then with a lot of the odd dad and the stuff that we're doing in West Texas now, we hunt all the way through May.
Right.
And then, some of the, when we've done the desert sheep tags in Texas and stuff, we hunt those in July. So you're only down to a month or two break. And
right. It's that early? It's July for the desert sheep?
Yeah. The way the desert sheep work in Texas is they do the surveys in August and they issue all the tags, and those tags are good from September 1st to July 31st of the next year. So it's an 11 month long tag.
Okay.
And a lot of times, by the time that they get the tag sold and stuff, it's on into the winter, and then those sheep rut in July and August. And so three different occasions, we've actually waited until about the middle of July to hunt them when they're rutting. And so it's pretty hot then, and
that's crazy,
good time to hunt them. So yeah, between that and then like I said, hunting aw dad all the way through, I think this year we finished up the last aw dad hunt the last week of May. So not a big break.
Pretty hot that time of year, though, especially in Texas. Well, before we get rolling to some questions, I'm actually, you brought up a good point about, how people think it's not a year-round gig. We're going to get into that a little bit. Why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself so those who don't know who you are can get acclimated with you.
All right. Well, my name is Zach Knowles, like you said, and I own and operate Extreme Outfitters. I actually live in Tennessee. I spend, I think, about as much time elsewhere as I do here, but I get my mail here in Tennessee, and I'm 27 years old. I've been around this business pretty much my whole life. My dad was an outfitter for 10 or 12 years in Canada, and so I grew up, being around that and seeing him operate those deer and bear hunts up there, and always had an interest in it. And then hunted growing up, and when I got in high school, I got pretty big into baseball and horses and rodeos and roping, and so I didn't hunt a whole lot for several years there, and I was just off doing other things. And then I guess I was 21 or two, I decided I wanted to start hunting some more, and pretty much wanted a way that I could make a living, being able to hunt and then being able to still rope and do the rodeo stuff I wanted to do also. And so mm-hmm. It's just kind of a good fit. And just really a couple really big breaks and chance encounters and a lot of luck. I kind of fell into some pretty unique deals and met some really good guys and had some success early on, thanks to a lot of different things. And it all just really kind of fell into place. So a lot of people, I get the question all the time, how do you get started or how did you get started? And, I can tell you some things and some tips and tricks and things that you need to do, but, it's like anything else. It just, a lot of it, like I said, just kind of fell into place. And I look
Yeah,
back now,
stars have to align.
I'm not really sure how I got here, but.
Yeah. So Zach's being a little modest in his description of himself. He actually, he goes, you've been to like Turkey, you've guided in all kinds of places for all different types of animals and done sheep hunts and not just Texas and other places and do elk hunts and antelope and deer and pretty much if it's got four legs and you could stick a tag on it, you're hunting
Yeah,
it.
and
So.
a little bit, I guess a little bit about my business that's allowed me to do some things like that is mine is, while I've got places, I lease a bunch of land in Kansas where we hunt mule deer and whitetails, and I've got a bunch of land in Texas where we hunt the Awdad, and I've got a ranch in Mexico. And so there's places that we go back to the same year, kind of like a typical outfitter, and have, new clients and repeat clients and everything else. But a lot of my business has moved towards, I've got a really good group of clients now, and it's not one group of friends from the same town, but just the group as a whole. And, they'll tell me, like last year, one of them told me, "Hey, me and three of my buddies, we want to go kill giant mule deer somewhere. We don't care where it's at. We don't know anything about it. Just, make it happen. Here's our budget." And so I went, found a ranch in Mexico, leased it, set it all up, all the way down to, booking the plane tickets, and just told them where to show up. And then I go with them, helped them out. We had a local outfitter down there that we worked with. And so a lot of times I'll go do other stuff like that, and I'll actually work with another outfitter in the area, but these guys want me to go with them. I know how they can walk, I know how they can hike, I know what kind of food they like, all the stuff. And some of them, like that particular group of guys, they've told me, "We're not going anywhere in the world if you don't go with us." And so that's how I've gotten to do, I got to go to Alaska and do a Dall sheep hunt, same kind of deal. Turkey for the ibex. That's how I got started in Mexico. Just all kinds of neat stuff like that. That so I get to go over, and in doing that, I get to see a lot of cool stuff and things that you typically wouldn't get to do if you were, just an elk outfitter on a ranch in Colorado. So.
When you're hunting in one state, your own home state, yeah, that's fine and dandy. You become a real expert at that one thing, but to branch out and do all that stuff, you're basically a boutique guide,
Right. Yeah, it's really a
It's
book
kind
guide
of cool though.
too.
It's I mean, if I had a way to do it, if I was going to do it, that's the way I'd like to do it. I mean, part of it for me to do what I do is I love the adventure. I love to go see new places, do new things. So,
Yep.
hunting the same piece of ground year in, year out doesn't, I mean, I like that too, because I do that here in my home state, but it's not, it, I don't think I could do that for a job.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely places where I like to go, year after year, and I keep talking about the Awdad in Texas. That's probably my favorite thing to hunt, aside from maybe getting to go do a desert sheep. But so I mean, there's stuff like that that I look forward to, and I love going back to the same places and hunting the same stuff every year. But it's neat to get to mix it up and throw in some other stuff too. So.
Cool. Well, so being this guy that goes and hunts multiple species and multiple states and multiple countries and all types of different landscapes and stuff like that, what are some ways that you go about your scouting? What are some like tips and tricks that you could share with people that they could adapt into their own skill set to help them, plan out of state hunts or do, stuff that's not in their backyard.
Right. Honestly, a lot of times when I go do stuff like that, I don't get a chance to go scout, or if I do, it's just a couple of days. I'll try to fly in a couple of days earlier, drive in, and spend a few days learning the terrain. And so a lot of it I have to rely on. One of the things I've had some success doing, and it's kind of a fine line, because one of my biggest pet peeves is somebody calling and asking me, or seeing somebody else ask somebody, "Well, where'd you kill that?" or "What unit were you in?" or "What mountain are you in?" or "Where do I need to go to find out?" whatever. So I don't want to just call somebody and say, "Hey, where's all the best spots to go, find a bull in this unit." But if you'll call, like I've called game and fish officers before, called biologists, people that don't necessarily have a tag or have a business interest in it, call and ask people. A lot of times they're a lot of help, and they can tell you where, historically elk or have been that time of the year, or deer or whatever. And so ask those kind of people. If you know somebody that, you know, has say hunted that unit in the past and maybe they don't have a tag there this year, you know, call them. And I always try to preface the conversation by saying, you know, I'm not asking for your secret spots. I'm not asking for you to, you know, give up any of your information that you don't want to, but just ask for help in some places, but be polite about it. And if someone, you know, declines or is not as helpful as you thought they were going to be, you know, don't be rude about it and get mad at you. So I do that a lot of times. And then, you know, looking at maps, I use like Google Earth and the Onyx maps and stuff, any kind of the satellite imaging maps. And a lot of what I do for the western hunting and mountain hunting in general, and that's kind of ties into another question people always ask me, well, how do you go hunt somewhere and guide somebody where you've never been? And kind of my whole strategy is climb to the highest point I can find and sit down with my 15 power binoculars and just start looking. And you'll eventually learn places where animals are more likely to be and different types of terrain. And if you just start looking in those places and you can glass good enough, you'll find them. And so a lot of mine is just, you know, try to narrow on a spot with a map or some intel from somebody where animals should be, and then just get in there and find them.
Right. Now, are you when you're looking at maps, other than looking for high points and stuff like that, are you looking for specific landscape features or anything that you know that you typically can correlate? Okay, I always see elk in this, I always see deer in this type of, you know, terrain features and whatnot. Or do you not even get that detailed until you get there?
I do, well, a couple things. Yes and no. One of the first things, especially in the West and the farther south you get, you know, Texas, there, I know you're really familiar with Arizona, New Mexico, is you got to get around some water. If you don't have water, and a lot of, we were actually talking about that this weekend with some guys at a sports show here in the East. You know how if you go lease a piece of ground in the East or you're going to go somewhere and hunt some public land, most of the time around here, water would never cross your mind because there's water everywhere. So if you're
Right.
looking for a place to go hunt, you don't think, well, I wonder if they have a pond or a creek or whatever, because it's everywhere. Well, out west, it's totally different than that. And if you don't have water, you don't have animals. And you know, there's been ranches that I went and looked at to lease to hunt deer or elk or whatever, and you get there and there's no water, and you might as well just, I mean, go somewhere else because the animals are not going to be there. So if it's somewhere in an arid climate, you know, in a desert setting, look for some water, whether it be tanks or drinkers or windmills or whatever. And so you can look for stuff like that on a map. And then also, depending on the time of the year that it is, you know, if I'm hunting late season elk in Montana, I'm going to look for the thickest, nastiest places as far off a road where I can find. And that's going to be where the bulls are going to be. After they've been hunted for 4 months, they're not going to be standing in the flats down the road. So I can look and cut all that stuff off and start looking for deep, nasty pockets of timber. And, you know, if I'm hunting, you know, Kansas mule deer in the early season in September, I'm going to look for the milo fields and the wheat fields and the places, the food sources where I know they're going to be, and they're still going to be grouped up. And, you know, if I'm hunting them late season, kind of the same thing. I'm going to start looking farther off the road and deeper places where there's maybe some food left where those bucks are going to go. And so some of it is just is knowing what you're after and their patterns throughout the year. And that's another thing that a lot of times like Game and Fish or somebody might help you with, you know, ask them where do those bulls go after they get done rutting. And so that's a lot of what I look for.
That's always my first question to game and fish guys or biologists or whatever. I always approach it from a biologist standpoint, and I always say to them, you know, what are their behaviors? What is the type of food that they look for? What are their pattern types at this time of year? And then it's not asking them for a spot. It's asking them for information that you could find your own spot. And then being able to decipher those things on a map is a whole different thing, but or Google Earth, but no, that's a really good way. I mean, that's the way I go about it, and more and more I talk to people on the podcast, that's basically all the same guys that have a high success. Man, that's what they're doing.
Yep.
You know, it's learning. It's learning animal behavior and whatnot. And yeah, it changes from region to region and area to area. And that's learning those nuances at each place. But the core stuff is always there, and you can always start with the core stuff and then pick up, you know, the nuances, so to speak.
Sure. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, and it, you know, a lot of it too is just when you've hunted a certain animal a lot, and you've hunted, you know, a certain time of year or a certain area, a lot of it too is, you know, when you get there, I don't know if you call it an instinct or a feeling or whatever you want to call it, but a lot of it too is just getting there and looking around and seeing what the weather's like and seeing what the, you know, movement's like, and just pick a spot and go with it. And, you know, a lot of times you'd be surprised what your own instinct will do for you. I don't know. And a lot of it too, especially in the later seasons, is you got to be willing to get out and outwalk some guys and get back in there and get off the roads. And, you know, those, the big elk and the big deer and the big whatever, all the ones that stand out along the road, they're going to get killed and not going to get big. And, you know, those big old bulls and bucks and rams and all that, they didn't get big by standing down 400 yards off the road. And so,
no,
some stuff, you know, we killed a big bull in Colorado last year, that I had found that was way back off a road. Some guys actually, we watched this bull 4 or 5 days before the season. I had an older hunter with me. He was 80 years old. And wow. The night before the season opened, some guys pulled up behind us and saw the bull and basically told us to, you know, screw off. They were going to go past us anyways because it was public land. And I said, I understand it's public land, but, you know, we've been sitting on this bull 5 days and this guy's 80 years old. And, you know, we were actually kind of in the back corner of the unit up against the Utah fence. And I said, I'm not trying to block off a whole bunch of the unit. I said, it's just this one canyon. And anyways, they said, you know, we're going anyways. And so they had to turn around and go back down and get their rifles. And so as soon as they left, we had all our stuff with us. And we were planning on going back to a base camp that night. And I told my hunter, I said, if you want to kill this bull, we're going to have to take off walking now and spend the night up here somewhere and get on that bull. Cause I said, they'll outwalk us in the morning. Cause you know, this guy couldn't walk very good. And so right. We actually took off right there and walked 3 or 4 miles in the dark, spent the night under a bush and killed that bull at first light. And as soon as we walked up to him and hadn't even really touched him yet, we're just standing over looking at him. And those four guys came walking up and they were a bit shocked and wanted to know how we got in there that quick. And so, I mean, there's times like that when it may be a little uncomfortable, a little hard, but
yeah,
I didn't want to walk 5 miles in the dark and sleep under a bush, but we did what we had to do to kill the bull. So,
yeah, I'm sure the 80-year-old guy didn't want to do that either.
No, I know he didn't, but he was sure excited when he got it done. So.
Oh, I bet the world owed that bull to you guys after that.
We did work for that one. And then I had to get the whole thing out by myself because the poor old guy couldn't carry anything. And he actually had some altitude sickness. And
oh, jeez.
It turned into a wreck, but we got it done. So
nice. So you started saying something earlier about, like, you know, having that intuition or that feeling. When you walk in, let's talk about deer for a second. You walk into the woods. And what is that like? What is if you see a couple different things when you walk in there, and you, when you see these couple different things, you say to yourself, or when you get to a glassing spot, for instance, and you look over the terrain and you see this terrain, what are a couple things that you see that automatically say, I'm going to see deer today?
You got to have a food source. Generally in my experience, those, and let's say it's not the rut, cause there's no telling what could happen then, but not in a rut situation. If you're looking for a big buck, you gotta have food. Obviously there's gotta be some water somewhere relatively close. They're not going to have to stand right over it, but, and they don't seem to get very far away from cover if they get out of it at all. Mm-hmm. I found a lot of big deer, just by seeing a tine or a flick of a tail or something in a bush, and they'll stand up under a cedar tree or something and eat right there around it and never come out from under it. So if you're looking for those big old smart bucks like that, a lot of times look in the thickest, nastiest stuff you can find, and take your time. I can't tell you or tell because you use them, but stress to people the importance of or the advantage of get a pair of 15 power binoculars. I think Swarovskis are the best. Put them
Me
on a
too.
put them on a tripod, and I cannot tell you how much more game you will find if you'll put a high-powered set of binoculars on a tripod and sit down on your butt or on a stool and just take your time and look at every square inch of a hillside. I tell people before I leave my boots at home and hunt barefoot before I leave my 15s at home, and I don't care if I'm hunting, whitetails in Kentucky or sheep in Alaska or coos deer in Mexico. Those binoculars are with me everywhere I go, no matter what, and so when I sit down like that, there's always, and I don't really know how to explain it. If we were sitting there on the hill, I could show you here, but it's kind of back to that intuition thing. I think your eyes or whatever you want to call it sometimes are just drawn to different places, and it's just almost a subconscious thing. After you've glassed, hundreds and hundreds of animals, I think your mind almost develops a pattern where you're more likely to see them, and that's where you're drawn to. But so there's always, seems like a few spots that I'm like, oh, I can't wait to check that out, and I'll check out a few places on the hillside that look really good, and then if I don't find anything, I'll just go back and start, working my way across or up and down. And I hear a lot of guys talk about glassing patterns and gritting and all that, and I don't know that I don't really have a specific pattern I
I was
use.
just going to ask you that if you had a pattern.
No, I really don't. I could tell you some cool thing that I do, but I really don't. I just kind of go where it feels good, and I do try to make sure that I cover everything, and usually two or three
Eventually.
times. And usually two or three times as long as I have time, but I don't really feel like I have any certain type of pattern other than just make sure you get it all done at one point or another. And the other thing too that go back and check places and try to glass them two or three times, because I can't tell you how many times I've picked up a deer and watched it for 5 seconds and it steps behind a bush, and
Then
then
you don't see it no more.
I don't see it for 30 minutes. And so just because there wasn't something standing there when you went by it the first time, like go back and check that stuff two, three, four times, and you'd be surprised. A lot of times you'll look back a spot you just looked 2 minutes ago and there's three deer standing there.
I
So
used to have a pattern. I used to do the old typewriter thing, start at the top or start at the bottom and just go left to right and just kind of work my way up,
yep.
or work my way down mostly. And then over the years, I just, like you were saying, I just, oh, that spot looks really good. That spot looks really good. That spot looks really good. And I kind of hit
Yeah.
those spots first, and then I kind of,
Then go
haphazardly
back.
go through the rest. But I don't know, it's worked for me thus far. I think you like you said, you kind of just develop a sense of where deer like to be or elk like to be,
Yep.
and
I
it
tell you
kind of just kind of works.
the other thing too that I've had happen several times that I've has made me start doing this is you walk over, top of a hill, crest of a hill, and sit down and get all your stuff out to glass. I'll usually, if there's some thick stuff in front of me, pull up your 10 power binoculars and glass that first 2 or 3 yards in front of you with your 10s, because I don't know how many times we've walked up and sat down and you're getting stuff out and clanging your tripod and making noise, and you'll look up 70 yards down the hill, a buck will have stood up, see what the hell's going on. And so check close first. Because more than likely, if there is something like that, you might not have but just a minute to look at it and decide if you want to shoot it or whatever. More than likely, a deer that's out there 1,500 yards, he'll be there in 30 more seconds. But there's been a lot of times, time we got everything set up and got quiet, you look up and there's a deer standing right there. So, even if you can see 1,000 yards in every direction, look at 50 first. So
Yeah,
I
no, it
usually
makes perfect sense.
kind of check right around me and then go out farther. So.
Cool. Yeah, I know. I know. Notice another thing that I started doing while glassing, and specifically in the evening, I get to a certain point in the evening where I know that if I see something out that far, I'm not going to be able to get to it. So I just
Right.
start progressively glancing close, excuse me, closer to me, or at least within my effective range of getting to that animal before it gets too dark to even put a move on them.
Right.
And in the mornings, I don't really do the opposite. I mean, I still look close, but I do tend to look out a lot further.
Look farther when you know you got time, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and that does, there's no need wasting your time, trying to dig up something, a mile away if you've only got 15 minutes of shooting light left. So yeah, that does make sense. Concentrate your time, what little time you have left, on trying to find something that you can make a move on.
Yeah, for sure.
And like I said, I use the 15 by 56 Swarovskis on a tripod, and then I carry a set of the 10 by 42 rangefinder Swarovskis on my chest in a
Okay.
harness, and then I've got the 30 by 70 by 95 spotting scope that I keep in my pack, and I don't ever take it out until I find something that I want to look at closer. I don't try to glass or find stuff with the spotting scope. I
I
know a
can't
few
do
guys
it.
that do, but it doesn't work well for me. I'm actually waiting to get one of the new BTX eyepieces for it.
Yeah.
A couple guys I've talked to that have got their hands on one already said those are unreal. So I'm pretty
I went and
excited
did a
about some
review
of
on
those.
them. I
Did
went and
you like
really did a review on them. I'm actually going to do a more extensive review. I'm supposed to get with the guys here at the Outdoorsman pretty
Oh,
soon, and we're going to go through the BTX with the little spotting scope is
with the big
actually the gig.
tripod.
Yeah, it's the gig, man. It's only 4 pounds, and I mean, you see great. I was sitting at their shop, and I was glassing. I don't know how many freaking miles away. I mean, probably 5 or 5 miles away. And I picked up a herd of javelina, and because
That's
they're in Found
incredible.
Hills now, and I was like, "You got to be shitting me,"
That's
I was
incredible.
like, "Yeah," and I was pretty impressed with that. It almost made me pull out the wallet right then and there.
Oh
But
yeah.
I don't
Yeah,
know, man.
I'm
I
looking
you know what
forward to
my
getting
biggest thing is,
one.
I
I'll
hate
look
weight.
for
I've had a spotting scope for I don't know for however long. I sold it, and now I just got another one because I traded a guy a rifle for it, and I don't think it's been out of my house since I got it. I've had it for over a year.
Really?
Yeah, it's just sit. I don't know, man. I just hate carrying, and I'm not the type of guy that like if I see something that looks good, I'm not gonna be like, oh, I don't know, he's probably only a 160 and he's not a
Right.
170.
Right.
Not that kind of guy. So I'm like, ah, oh, he looks good. I'm going. It's just, I
Yeah,
don't
and
know.
if I'm hunting for
But
myself, I'm exactly the same way. And this kind of get off on another little subject for a minute. And this is a little bit of a, I don't really say it's a rant, but it's just a difference in people's motivations or their opinions. I have guys ask me all the time, say we're on a hunt somewhere and glass up this buck, and I say, look, here's a nice deer, what do you think about it? And they'll look at it and they'll say, well, what does he score? And I used to try to, put the numbers to it and get it exactly and say, look, I think this deer's, 170, 172 to 175, whatever, blah, blah. And now I've gotten to where on most of the hunts, I just tell guys, look, I think he's a 170 class deer, whatever, 180 class deer, but if he makes you happy, let's go kill him if you'll be satisfied with him. If he doesn't excite you or you don't think that that's what you want hanging on your wall, we'll move on. And now there's some stuff, I do some of the high-end commissioners and governors type tags, and those kind of guys, when they're paying
Yeah,
thousands and
they're
thousands,
expected.
they want, like I had a guy tell me last year, it was a governor's tag, and he said, on the mule deer, he said, I've got, I forget what he told me now, like 26 mule deer that score between 180 and 189. And he's got a couple over 190, and he said, I don't want another 180 inch mule deer. And he said, if he's 189 and 7/8, he said, I'm gonna be pissed. He said, if he's 190 and an eighth, I'll be tickled to death. And
Yeah.
he said 190 is the number. And so we hunted 6 or 7 days, and I found a buck, and He was right there on the line, and we looked and looked and looked and looked for forever at this deer, and I scored him every which way I could score him, and I told him, I said, I think he's between 192 and 195, but I said, that's as close as it, because we were like 660 yards away, as close as we
Yeah,
could get.
how do they expect you to come up with a really, really accurate number, honestly, at that
But
distance?
this deer was bedded, and we were looking at him on 70 power in that Swarovski, and I said, I'm pretty sure he's going to break 190. I think he's going to be close to 195. But I said, you look at him, and if he makes you happy, you shoot him. If not, if it's too close to call, we got the whole season to hunt. We'll keep going. And he ended up shooting, and the deer was 194, so it worked out. But,
Nice.
so in a situation like that, I have to carry the big spotting scope. And I got on a deal in Alaska on a doll sheep hunt. Same way, those sheep up there have to be
Yeah, well, that's a
full
legality
curl
thing.
or a
Yeah.
certain age. And, I was able to age this ram because I had that spotting scope and was able to look at him close. But I guess back to, like you said, if I'm just hunting for myself, and I'm the same way, I haven't got to kill enough big stuff. That's what people always say, oh, I bet you've killed some giant deer, some giant. I haven't killed hardly anything. I mean, I've got a 170-inch mule deer, is the biggest mule deer I've ever killed, and a 330-something-inch bull, and I'm not only good to pull the trigger. And so I'm still kind of, when I go hunt for myself, I have to kind of make myself hold off, because I still get excited because I haven't killed that much stuff. I've killed a bunch of animals, whitetails in Tennessee and that kind of stuff, but as far as like big trophy animals, I haven't really killed a whole lot of big stuff at all. I killed a pretty big oddad,
Right.
but I'm still in that deal. It's not very hard to get me excited when the gun's in my hand, so
I
I'm
guess I
not
can say
worried
the
about
same thing
it.
about myself too. I haven't killed a bunch of
You've
big
killed a bunch
stuff.
more than I have.
I've killed a bunch of stuff. I mean, I'm up in the 200 range for sure, but I got like just a crap ton of medium-sized animals, man.
Yeah, that's
I got
fine.
an itchy trigger finger. I
Yeah.
can't like, I can't say no. Like if it's like, if it excites me, I mean, the only thing now that I feel like I can hold off on, like, and even then is whitetail, like Eastern whitetail,
Right. Yeah.
a 130 buck steps out. It's hard for me not to shoot them, although,
But still,
it's
yeah.
like, yeah, but still, I should be holding out for, 150s and 160s, but
Well, and I'm the same way with the whitetails, and I almost feel bad because I almost feel like I'm kind of betraying my upbringing, or whatever you want to call it. I grew up on Eastern whitetails, and we hunted them. Just if the season was open, we hunted, and that was kind of my deal. And now, I mean, it almost sounds bad. I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but I've got to go do so much cool stuff and be a part of seeing so many big animals die, and big bulls and big mule deer and sheep. And I come home now, and my buddy's like, "Let's go deer hunting," and I'm like, "I don't know if I want to go, sit there and watch for, be lucky if a 100-inch whitetail steps out." And I don't know. The whitetails don't really excite me anymore. I drew a
No.
Kansas whitetail tag this year. I put in. I won't get into the whole thing, but basically in Kansas, to be eligible to draw a mule deer tag, you have to
Get
put in
part
for
of the
whitetail.
whitetail, yeah.
And so I drew a whitetail tag in Kansas, and I was talking to somebody the other day, and they're like, "Man, because I've got a bunch of ground, almost 80,000 acres leased in Kansas," and I said, "Oh man, I bet you're just going to kill a giant and all that." And I said, "Honestly, I don't know if I'm going to hunt.
Yeah.
I've got some hunters coming, some whitetail hunters, so that's one thing. I'm sure not going to step in front of paying clients
Right.
and kill a big deer, but." Even if everybody gets done, I'm almost something like that. I'll go shoot a management deer or something that needs to be killed. But I don't know. The whitetail's just, I killed a 100 and probably 150-inch buck in Texas last year. A freak deal, really. I was checking lion traps and jumped this buck up out of a patch of cactus. I actually shot him with a pistol. And it ended up being the biggest whitetail I've ever killed. So I don't know. I want to kill a really big mule deer. I'm putting in my time to draw either a Kansas mule deer tag, or I've been building points in Arizona and stuff, and that's probably my, aside from killing a sheep, I want to kill any one of the sheep. But probably my next thing on the list was I want to kill a really big mule deer, and I'm gonna
Yeah.
put my time in and draw a tag somewhere, and I'll go kill one. But I don't know. I like hunting, and I like hunting elk probably third best, but the sheep and the mule deer are what really
Sheep
my
hunting's something different, man. It's a whole
thing.
different
You're either hooked or you're not. I mean, you either love it
Yeah.
or could care
Or
less about it. And I feel like if you
yeah.
love it,
Oh my
it's
God. Freaking sheep and ibex. I haven't gone
oh
mountain goat hunting yet, but shit, I put in three different states for mountain goat. Hopefully eventually I have a freaking
yeah,
job,
that's actually pretty high on my list right now because I feel like that's the pretty comparable to a sheep hunt, and that's actually something I feel like is fairly attainable for me to
yeah.
get to do a goat hunt. And I'm all about the adventure and the danger and the mountain climbing and the almost
Yep.
dying and that kind of stuff. And they say mountain goat hunting is pretty extreme, so
Yeah.
I do try to get on that here in the next couple of years while I'm still physically able. So
Ah, come on, man. I got 15 years on you almost.
yeah.
I think I could do it for another 10, 15 years for sure. But no, I mean, it's definitely something I want to do. I mean, it's just a matter of getting a tag. I don't think that I could ever, I don't know, you know, unless something amazing happens to me and financially here in the next whatever. But everybody's like, oh, just, you know, save up and go, you know, get a guaranteed tag or what. I'm like, fuck me. I just, it's even the thought of it, even if I could afford it, it's even the thought of paying that much money
Oh yeah,
for a
no,
tag. It's like, I just can't do it, man.
yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm stealing something from my kids, you know?
Well, if you're drawing luck, Mr. Ibex and Desert Sheep and Awdag and
Yeah.
all, you'll
You
draw
know,
some
hey, I've
pretty
been
quick.
putting in for, you know, I've been playing the tag game for 20 some odd years. So,
It's
you
about
know,
time to get
some of
on.
these things started coming to fruition. Like this year, you were mentioning getting a big desert muley. I have a really good potential to, I mean, the unit's not the greatest in the state, but I got a late season rifle tag. I got a rut rifle tag this year for mule deer
Yeah.
here in Arizona.
There's probably not a bad unit for that.
No, it's they're all over. There's big deer in every unit, but
Yeah.
it's there's some units that you can pretty much guarantee you're gonna go kill 180 or better.
Right.
This is not that unit, but it's there are big sons of bitches in there, and
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
Oh yeah.
So
Yeah, you're feeling. I didn't draw
I've
any
never
yet.
once hunted mule deer in Arizona with a rifle.
Really?
Nope.
I've never hunted mule deer in
I've only
Arizona.
put in for coos deer, rifle coos deer. I've never even put in for mule. This is the first year I put in for, that's not true. I always put in like second choice for, you know, kybab or whatever, but I never draw
Never
that shit.
draw,
Something I'm never gonna draw. But yeah, no, it's my first time ever going. I always, because I'm, for me, I'm like, I don't think to put them in because the earlier rifle hunts aren't very good. They're real tough hunts and it's still kind of hot, and you know, unless you're hunting up north, and then it's not a
Right.
desert, that it's not a desert buck. You know, and I always get to chase them with the bow, and that's usually what I do in January is I switch from, you know, coos deer to mule deer. So it's never been a thing for me, but I'm like, this year, you know what, I'm gonna put in for this because they kind of move the dates around, they move some units around, and the unit that I'm hunting is close to archery, so it's usually, it has been historically been open to archery, but the last year and this year it's close to archery. So like it's just me and like 20 or I don't know if it's 20 tags, 20 to 20 or 25 tags total.
Yeah.
So you know, it's just me and a few other guys out there running around with rifles and no archery hunters for the last, I don't know, it was last year or this year. So it should be a
Yeah, that should
good
be a
hunt,
good
man. I'm
trip.
excited.
Yeah. When is that? November or December?
December 15th or 13th to the
Okay.
31st, something like that. Yeah, so that should be cool. I'm excited about that,
Oh yeah,
and plus it's
that's
close to my house, which is always better. I can operate out of home,
Oh yeah.
you know.
Yeah,
I'm not
that's
gonna be away from the family.
that is nice to be able to. I just got back yesterday from up in Eastern Kentucky. Went up there and took a bunch of salt in and stuff. Actually packed it in on horses. I've got some elk hunters there in Kentucky and this year. And as much as I don't like hunting there, just because of the terrain and the just kind of the whole thing doesn't fit my style of hunting. It's really, really thick
Thick, yeah.
hardwoods, and it's really. I don't know. It just doesn't really fit my style, and I don't care for it much. But I've got a couple of really good clients that love hunting there, and so I keep doing it with them. And I've got two this year. But that is the one thing I do like about it is it's 3 hours from my house, and I'm not used to getting to hunt and then drive home that night, or just be able to run up there and check a trail camera or whatever. And so that is nice being able to to hunt out close to your house or close to your family or whatever. So, because I spend a lot of time, sometimes I think this season coming up, I'll leave here about the 5th of September, and I probably won't be home till the middle of November. And then only for about a week, and then I'll be back gone basically till probably March or April. And so it gets long. And
yeah. How many days do you say you're in the field?
Oh gosh. I don't know. I've never really figured it up. I know this year, and I wasn't thinking when I was doing my schedule, and I got a little bit too carried away with it, but we start hunting in Kansas on the 11th of September, and I have hunts booked or days hunting booked from the 11th of September to I think the 7th of November, every single day in four different states. So there's three different times when I'm going to have to literally hunt until mid-afternoon, drive a couple hours to an airport, fly somewhere else, and start hunting the next morning. And I like I said, I did not mean to do it that way. I wasn't paying attention when I was booking stuff, but from the 11th of September to about the 6th of November. Now, obviously, hopefully, there will be instances where we kill out early.
Right.
And I have a deer or two in between, but theoretically, I've got a hunt somewhere to be hunting every day from the 1st of September to mid-November.
Unreal.
I didn't really plan much for the middle to the end of November. I'm entering in a big rope in Las Vegas in December, and so I was wanting to be able to come home and rope for a couple weeks in November, and then I'll go back to Kansas the end of November, and then one of my good clients actually bought the Alberta Minister's Mule Deer tag.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to go up there the first part of December and do that, and then I'll leave there and go to Vegas and rope for a week or two, and then head south to Mexico to hunt sheep and mule deer. I got four of the Tiburon Island Desert Sheep tags this year, and eight mule deer tags down there. So we'll be down there most of the January and February hunting deer and sheep. So
awesome, sweet man.
Girl.
Well, that's all I got for you. Thanks for, I wanted to, thank you for coming on and sharing some knowledge with us and whatnot. I'm sure you and I, we talk all the time. We'll get you on again and,
I'd
like to hear after you're done with the season.
Yeah.
See what you did.
For sure, man. Anytime.
Cool. Thanks.
You bet, man. Good luck this year.
Thank you.